ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्नस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकाया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
Come back into the room. And welcome back. And maybe I don't know, do you like it with the lights like this? We could stay like this, right?
I think this is good.
It's not bad. Okay. So, I wanted to leave a few practical points that I have put under the overall heading of spiritual fitness. We think about fitness in body, mind, but there's also what we call spiritual fitness, which starts from the inside out. And there are a few categories, and there are some practical points within the categories. So in the first, on your handout, I talk about attitude, because it's responsible for the way that we move in the world and the way we react to various situations. And very fortunately, attitude is something that's adjustable. I may have developed a certain kind of attitude by my upbringing, my association throughout my life, but it's something that can be adjusted, and it makes a big difference in when we change our attitude. So the old saying, your attitude determines your altitude, is very true, and it's mentioned in the ancient yogic texts. There's a lot about adjusting attitude when entering into the practice of yoga to be more balanced. And of course, any self-respecting self-help guru will tell you it's not what happens to you in life that's important, it's what you do about what happens to you. That's actually the basic mantra that everyone puts forward. And that really has to do with attitude, our perspective, and how we choose to deal with what happens to us. So here are a few practical points that I've gleaned from some of the yogic teachings. And one is that we are really, ultimately, all of us, a container. I mean, just think of yourself right now as a container, your heart as a container, and your level of contentment, and if you think of the word content and then content, are the same spelling. And so much of what we have and what we allow into us and what we allow to stay within us has to do with our attitude, the determination we've made what to keep, what to let go. That's our content. And that will have a lot to do with our level of contentment. And our level of contentment has so much to do with the way we conduct ourselves professionally, in personal relationships, and so on. And so much of what the yogic texts talk about on a very basic level is expanding the consciousness. And I'll go into that a little bit more on the last point, which is number 5. But I'll just briefly mention it now. When the consciousness is expansive, then we actually feel peaceful. And in the ancient yogic texts, there's a description of how we have a physical body, which is apparent. If you look at it, oftentimes I don't look at it, I just consider that I am my, well, I don't have any hair, but I am my hair, I am my arms, I am my legs. But if you look at it from another point of view, which I tried to do briefly in the meditation, you can see that there's a difference between our life, we're the conscious observer, and our life situation. And actually, there's a difference between our conscious self, which is called in Sanskrit the Atma, and the gross physical body and the subtle psychological body. And this is a distinction that's made in the yogic teachings, that the physical body is obviously, because you can reduce it down to these elements, earth, water, fire, air. And then you get into the subtle elements called ether, mind, intelligence, and ahankar, or ego. And these comprise the gross and subtle elements that the body's made of. Ether is ke, or ka, in Sanskrit, and it means space. And sometimes people think that's a funny element, space. But it's actually a very important element. if you've ever lost your space bar on your computer and you try typing something, there's no space between words. Or if you try speaking and you just take out all the punctuation, you'll notice that it's incomprehensible. And space gives us some understanding, some perspective. And so there's a way in which we have this gross physical body, which you can feel for yourself. You feel your arm, you'll notice that it's kind of, go ahead, squishy. It's got water in it. We're 75% water. You're not water. You're something that's observing the water within your body. And then there's earth. You're at around 98.6, so there's some heat, some fire in your body. And then air. We were just breathing. You're not the air that's coming in and out, but you're manipulating the air and you're feeling it coming in and out. And this is one of the practices of introspection, is to just notice step by step that I'm not my body. But then, am I my mind? Well, the mind is observable. And the point is that if you're able to observe something objectively, then it's not you. And so it's taking a step back and noticing that you have a mind, and also there's a fine distinction made between mind and intellect in the yogic teachings. The mind is kind of a warehouse where the impressions come in from the various senses. They're always pouring in, and these are called vrittis. I get impressions all day long. I don't even know they're coming in, but they are. And they're stored there in the mind, and the intellect is sort of the parent in the room that's deciding which ones to pick up and which ones to leave behind. And the intellect is more subtle than the mind itself. And the mind and intellect together and is called the citta, or the combined consciousness. So the reason I went through that technical explanation is just to come to this point, is the citta, or our mind intelligence, can become expanded or it can become contracted. And so many of the practices which seem very commonsensical, actually you'll notice that they help us to expand the citta. Example, if a fish is in a small bowl and it's thrashing around, it will make a mess. The water will come flying out and the turbulence will be noticeable. If a fish is in a big lake and he can thrash as much as he likes, and no one will really notice. And similarly, when our consciousness is expansive, then the various impressions that are coming to us all the time, and there are various causes, especially when you're working in an intense environment like you all do here, that there are various causes that of maybe turbulence. Is that possible?
Yes.
It's possible, right? I mean, so if your citta is expanded, then whatever comes into it will not disturb you. You'll be able to deal with it in a very dispassionate way. Methodical but dispassionate. I like those two words together, and I often recommend them when people say, what do I do now? I say, work methodically but dispassionately. And that's possible when the citta or the consciousness is expanded. So yogic wisdom tells us ways in which to live spiritual fitness in order to expand the consciousness, the citta. So one of the ways is to realize that we're containers. Be careful what you put in your container. I was walking by along the sidewalk in my neighborhood in Burlingame, the drain grids. And on top of each one of them, there's a little picture of a fish. And it says, no dumping drains to bay. Have you ever noticed that in the Bay Area? Every one of the storm drains says that on the top. There's a placard. And then I was actually doing a walking meditation as I was walking along. And then I was thinking, as I was saying my mantra, that my ears are like little storm drains. And now whatever I put in here, whatever I allow to go in, it drains to the bay of my heart, my citta. And it accumulates there. So being careful about what you put in, because eventually it ends up here. Garbage in, garbage out, right? It's well known. But oftentimes I don't consider it. The other aspect is, very simply put, as gratitude. This is an adjustment of attitude, because anyone in any situation can feel discomfort or feel unhappy by overlooking the gifts that are coming to us at every second. So I call this our appreciating capacity. Whatever we appreciate, appreciates. It actually grows for us, and it becomes much more noticeable and beneficial in our lives. But it's really easy to take things for granted, whatever I might have now, and always be looking to the future and not thinking about what I have right in the moment. So expanding the appreciating capacity. And Voltaire once said, appreciation is a wonderful thing. It makes what is excellent in others belong to us as well. So there's a way in which if I'm able to appreciate, feel gratitude for instance, others like colleagues, let's just say somebody's excelling in a certain area. There's two ways I could deal with it. I could feel like, why is that person getting ahead? Or I could appreciate the fact that somehow or other they're doing something in their life, they're more disciplined or something, and where they're able to accomplish something. And interestingly, when I appreciate that person, then I'm actually opening my citta, and I'm able to actually take in the qualities of that person through appreciation, as per the quote of Voltaire, which is very accurate and which is parallel to what the yogic teachings also say. Envy or grudges blocks the citta, it contracts, and I'm not able to take in from my environment the good things. The good qualities in others are not available to me when I envy people and think like, why them, why not me? So working on gratitude and appreciation is very powerful. And one of the principles, which is sort of a practice, is a phrase that I like, especially in management, because it's a principle that works on all teams. It's that encourage the heck out of everybody. Have you ever heard that before? Have you ever tried it? Well, just turn to somebody next to you and encourage them. You're a good dresser. I can see you take good care of yourself. Okay, stop. No more. No more encouraging. Okay, if you can hear me, raise your hand. If you can hear me, raise your hand. Don't you hate that when people encourage you like that? I mean, it just feels terrible. And the interesting thing is, whenever in any room, if you just try that for 3 seconds, the whole room lights up, everyone lights up, and nobody wants to stop. I usually joke, I say, stop, don't do it anymore, and people laugh. So in any organization, encouragement is so necessary from the French word cœur, which means the heart. In our heart, we're always hoping to have some encouragement from someone else. And even one word, one appreciation, that even when it's random, or even sometimes especially when it's random and not expected, can go a long way in an organization to bring people to a higher level of motivation. And it's such a simple thing, a conscious contact with others, encouragement. So as homework, I just ask you to try this. Go out of your way to find people doing something right and then encourage them. This is from a little book called The 1 Minute Manager, which came out in, I think, in the 1970s or 80s, but which I consumed quite readily and have appreciated for many years, is that one of the best ways to manage and to work in a team is to find people doing something right and then just taking a minute to appreciate it. And it brings the whole atmosphere up immediately. The appreciating capacity expands. And even if you were thinking like, I don't like that person so much, it could be, and usually is irrational, that there's something about them I don't like or some grudge I'm holding. But if you appreciate them, it tends to evaporate and it creates this kind of clarity in the room, in the organization, in the family, in any relationship that you have. So think about that. Another is don't carry grudges. You can make a vow There's a little box you can check off, says, I don't carry grudges. I don't take them with you wherever you go. You know what a grudge is? It's a fierce little animal. It's got teeth and claws. And a lot of times people carry grudges around. You know what a grudge is, right? Does somebody have a dictionary? Look up grudge. Yeah, Google grudge.
A persistent feeling of ill will or resentment resulting from a past insult or injury.
Ooh, ouch. So there is a way in which I could carry it around. And I describe it as a fierce little animal. You carry it on your arm, it growls at everybody. And so my advice is, with grudges, take it to the edge of the forest and say, bye, go ahead, run off, and let it go. It doesn't help us to carry grudges. And it's a choice. You can carry grudge or you can let it go. The next is a mantra that I learned one day, many years ago, when I was listening to an interview, and someone had made a slight, very slight faux pas in the answer he was giving in the interview, and the interviewer backed up and asked him about it. And the interviewee said, okay, that's okay. I live to be corrected. I want you to try this mantra just one time and say, I live to be corrected.
I live to be corrected.
Doesn't that sound dangerous to say that? But first a disclaimer, it doesn't mean that you let people bully you. It doesn't mean that you don't take do your due diligence if there's a persistent problem or situation with somebody. But it does mean internally you can adjust your attitude and look at the world in such a way that when there's friction or when there are situations that come up between you and someone else, try to take the lesson from it. And if you employ this mantra, which sometimes is not forthcoming, you actually have to drag it out and say, I live to be corrected, especially if you have a close friendship, you have a spouse, some intimate relationship where there's kind of familiarity, and then you say, I live to be corrected. The person will immediately drop their mood of attack or whatever it may be, and it opens the citta really wide that I'm live to be corrected. And finally, under Attitude 101, is to develop a service mind. Service is in harmony with our actual nature. And everyone's doing service in one way or another, of course, in various contexts. You know, we get paid for what we do. But ultimately, people are motivated by the service that they're doing. And that's what, according to the yogic texts, ultimately makes the heart happy. If you're doing some worthy service and you feel that it's worthy in doing for someone else. And if you think in terms of how can I be of more service, then there you don't have a lot of competition. Because a lot of times people are thinking in exploitative terms. How can I get ahead? How can I take from others? But if you're more of a giver and you're more thinking in the terms of service, you'll, with that attitude, which is very noticeable, it's subtle but very noticeable, people pick it up, you become welcome wherever you go. And you don't have a lot of competition. Whereas if you try to be the man or the woman and you want to be the center and take over everything, and it doesn't mean a service attitude that you don't take leadership roles. There may be, there is the very strong case for the service leader. But the mood is, when the mood is service, then the citta opens and everyone feels it and you'll feel it too. Now, since I've been going on with this monologue for some time, I'll just take a few reflections before I go into the last few parts. And reflections are easy. They're just anything that you've heard so far, any fragment, idea, experience from the meditation or the sharing that you had for a short amount of time that stuck in your mind. And you can just feed it back to amplify the conversation. Yes?
I'll start.
Okay.
Get the team started.
Yeah.
So it struck me when you said that we're a container and we should only let certain things in. How do we do that if we hear a lot of things around us?
Well, letting something in has a lot to do with what we're predisposed towards. And if we're a little selective, even in a cacophonous environment, you may hear many different kinds of sounds in your environment, you don't open your heart to it. There's a story my spiritual teacher gave me many years ago about this. And so he told about the alligator and the monkey. So there was a monkey who lived in a tree, and he made friends with the alligator down below in the big lake. And one day they were talking as friends, and the alligator said, why don't you come over to my house someday? Now, the alligator went home that night, and he was talking to his family, and they said, you're going to bring the monkey home? Well, we're going to eat him. And the alligator was shocked, but he had so much familiar pressure, he went back to the tree. He said, okay, why don't you come over now? So the monkey got on his back, and he was heading back to the alligator's house. And then the alligator admitted, he said, you know, I'm taking you home because my family actually wanted to eat you. And the monkey said, well, that's really interesting. You want to eat me? And they said, yes, they told that monkey heart, eating the heart of a monkey, is extremely extreme delicacy for alligators. And so the monkey said, well, I'm sorry you told me now because I left my heart back up in the tree. And the alligator said, oh, well, we can go back and get it. So then he turned around and he went back, and the monkey jumped up in the tree and then, of course, didn't come back down again. And the point he was making is, when obviously we have to interact with the world and hear many different sounds, but it's a matter of what you open your heart to. And if you're eager to develop a certain kind of content, you're careful about what you let in. It may be there, but it doesn't necessarily mean you have to take it to heart. That's the idea.
Thank you.
You're welcome. What are the reflections? Anything that you heard that stuck in your mind? Yes?
Like the left to be corrected?
Yes.
I think once you accept, apply, and practice that, there's no room for ego. And by that, you no longer be defensive, and you actually collaborate with your others.
Good point. And it's an interesting principle. When you honor objections, then it actually is very disarming. As when you are ready to take on, you know, the kind of objection a person is making or a certain suggestion or whatever, then it you sort of are able to absorb more and take the lesson. Nice. Yes?
I think one of the things that you said that I thought of a little bit is appreciating or encouraging or don't holding grudges, even though they're good for others, I think they're better for ourselves, actually. It makes us happier.
Yes.
When you encourage, like as I was telling, you know, Ali and Carolina, good things, I was feeling much better. I think that's true when you service, when you give, when you being kind to others.
Yes.
It's good for them, but it's actually more contributing.
Good for you.
Happiness.
Yes. Forgiveness is actually for you. And again, you may have to do due diligence to amend a particular situation, but it doesn't mean that you can't, within your own heart, forgive the person for your own sake. And there's an old saying that holding on to a grudge is like yourself drinking poison, hoping that the other person dies. One more, and then I'll go to the next sections. Any reflection, something that you heard that stuck? Yes.
Question
sure.
About breathing. Every time I try to do that, I forget even how to breathe. Seems like, you know, it says breathe through nose and breathe out through mouth, but I don't know what and how I'm breathing actually when I'm not paying attention. But every time I try to pay attention, it seems like it stops.
I know. That's it's wild, isn't it? And actually, I have a friend who teaches meditation, and he mentions that you should notice that actually you're not breathing, you're being breathed. Is the way he puts it. We're actually kind of on a breathing machine. Mm-hmm. As if you try to stop breathing, the breathing machine will say, keep going. Like to stop. As far as concentrating on the breathing and getting it in a pattern, it takes practice. Just like if you're learning an instrument, you have to go over and over it again until it becomes the body-mind connection gets established. Thank you. Nice point. The second category is unclutter from the inside. This is very practical because there's a lot that we can consume, and even if we don't try to consume, things come into our environment sort of naturally. They come in our house, they come in our car, they come in your purse, come in your briefcase, in your office, they sort of pile up. And what professional organizers often say is when you keep unnecessary things in your environment, it amounts to what's called visual noise. It's noise that distracts us, we don't even know it, extra things around. And the simple act of decluttering, which is in the yogic teaching, is called atyahara. Actually, it's an interesting term because ati means extreme and ahara means eating. So it's like, you know, there's extreme sports, there's extreme eating, and it also goes to extreme collecting. Don't collect too much, collect what you need and keep things in order. A place for everything and everything in its place. This fosters what is called sattva, or a clarity of consciousness. It's almost a mechanical exercise that you can do, but if you practice uncluttering your external environment, you'll notice that you're more peaceful inwardly. Now, what about inwardly? There's a lot of clutter there because lots of things come in to my consciousness and they're just there. And there's a system Stephen Covey taught many years ago that I found extremely useful, and you can carry it with you in your mind wherever you go and try it out for eliminating internal clutter. And these are the two circles that you see on your page. The bigger circle is called your circle of concern. For instance, is there anything right now that you're concerned about? Like, say, something happening in the world somewhere right now that's really bugging you a lot. Yeah, everyone says that. I mean, I've been getting texts all morning, people, what do I do about the Amazon fire? And now, what can you do about the Amazon fire right now? That would mean...
Donate money?
Yeah, you could do that. And that would move it into this internal circle. So this internal circle is much smaller, and this internal circle is called your circle of influence. If you distinguish between the things that are bothering you because they're of concern to you, and then move it into the smaller circle and say, what can I actually do about it? Then it takes it off that level of being just an amorphous anxiety that's constantly there, which tends to contract the consciousness. And I just become full of anxiety. And I can collect lots of things, and if I stay in this outer circle, I'm always in anxiety, even when I'm sleeping. I'm processing things I can't do anything about. But if you deliberately move by looking and seeing and evaluating the kinds of anxieties that are coming to you and saying, is there something I can do about it right now? If not, retreat into your circle of influence. And if it is something you can do, like I could give money to the Amazon forest, then do that. But don't just let it stay in that outside circle. And this is space clutter. It's just floating around and around, and it'll just constantly disturb you and keep your consciousness contracted. So these are points about internal clutter, eliminating, and internal. And the next one is about attention. And this is almost a philosophical point, but according to the yogic teachings, and I mentioned this briefly at the beginning, what we are is really, in a very technical term, units of attention. And I'm proposing, and what I have written here, actually, if you notice, attention is our main asset. It's the thing that we actually have control over, as where we place our attention. And I want to teach you a mantra that has served me very well over many decades, and it is this. Please repeat if you dare. Where attention goes,
energy flows.
Where attention goes,
energy flows.
This is very powerful because you have control over your attention. And at any given moment, the direction that you're going to go and the way that you're going to develop and the way that your future is going to unfold has to do with where you're placing your attention right now. And at any given second, if you check in with this and say, where am I placing my attention now? And you can know for sure that after you place your attention there, your energy is going to flow in that direction. So be aware of where you're placing your attention. And this is a kind of a miracle. It is a panacea in relationships. And you know, one say, what's the secret to relationships and better relationships, wherever they may be? It has to do with the quality of our attention. So would you please just tell me about your morning for a second?
Well, I had some food poisoning last night. So I was like not sure if I was going to make it through the day, but I
I'm sorry.
Alarm clock a few times and extra time to get ready.
You said something about eating. I can't
And but yes, finally made it in and so it was
Thank you very much.
Not the best morning, I guess.
But how did you feel how I was responding at first to your telling me? I picked up my phone.
Yeah.
I turned this way, and my attention was elsewhere.
You didn't seem very interested. I'm like, I had this major incident.
And didn't it make you feel bad? Yeah. So, and it's very painful actually, and I apologize. You probably never forget. I did it deliberately. I have a friend that I talk to regularly. He's my editor, and we're often on Skype because we're usually in different countries at the same time. And he has a habit of looking at his watch. And whenever we're talking about an important matter, and he goes like this, I go, okay, you got to go, right? And he goes, no, I just looked at my watch. I said, yeah, but... And I realized by analyzing that situation that all it takes is a quarter of a second of breaking your attention with somebody to send an impression to them that you don't care. Fortunately, the converse is true also. If you give your full attention to somebody when they're speaking to you, for instance, if you told me about your morning and I went like this, you would have a completely different feeling. That's where attention goes, energy flows. And it's such a simple principle, but it's really easy to forget. But if you utilize this, it's the fulcrum of all healthy relationships, is how you give attention. It even works with animals, because they're conscious living beings also. If you give an attention to an animal, it's like, hi, how are you? They're like, hey, you looked at me. and there's this, now I want you to try something that's a little scary, is just try for 2 seconds to anybody in the room, look them right in the eye. Straight in the eye. It's uncomfortable. Okay. So, he's good. If you're driving down the 101 freeway, and let's just say you're a passenger and you're looking out your window to the driver next to you, and the driver looks over and goes, what? You know? But what is actually happening there? There's a power to your consciousness that gets projected into the world everywhere you go. We're way more powerful than we know. And all the time, we have the choice of where to project that power. And if you direct it, and just talking about relationships judiciously, when you're communicating with people, you drop whatever else you're doing, keep your hands still, lean in, listen, be careful. You'll make a new best friend if it's a stranger. I guarantee you. It's natural. This is how powerful the principle of attention is. It has the word ten in it, just like it's the same word in tendon. The muscles and bones are held together with these sinews called tendons, and it holds together. Our relationships are held together by our attention. And that is the sum and substance of how to develop better relationships in any context, is remembering that principle. The next is focus on what you are, not what you have. So I'll just make this proposal, as I did before, is there's a difference between your life and your life situation. Your life situation is what's going on all around you. there are lots of things that are happening in your life right now. I'm just guessing, right? More than you could count. I mean, if you started filling out a legal pad, just writing down all the projects that each one of you has going in your life, personal, professional, all your goals and everything like that, you would not come to the end of it in an hour or two. It's so extensive. There's so much that we're processing and in any given time. So that has to do with our life situation. That's what's going on around us. But we are the life or the consciousness that's observing that. So the things that we have in our life as part of our life situation are not as important as our life. The life is what ultimately counts. And the life situation will always be changing, always be moving. And through introspection, it's a practice to actually become aware and centered on your life and realize that that's always there and it's a place where you can take refuge. And two last points that are very practical. One is, change your words, change your world. You'll notice the quote, words are free, it's how you use them that may cost you. Words are free, it's how you use them that may cost you. So words, or you can think of your tongue, rather, as a rudder. I mean, just notice that the tongue, it's a small part of your body, relatively speaking, but it determines the way that your world opens, because words are like seeds. They're very powerful. You may notice that when you write words down and you send them to people through an email, it has consequences. Has anybody noticed that? And one wrong word published somewhere could actually ruin your reputation or a relationship. And the way we say things and what we say with our tongue is indicative of what's inside. It's coming out from the inside and it's coming out. And so one of the yogic principles, astoundingly, is that yoga begins with the tongue. And there's an ancient verse that says, Atashi Krishna Namadi Nabhaved Grayam Indriye Sevan Mukhihi Jivado Swayam Eva Spuratyada, which means that we can't perceive higher realities and see our higher self just with our blunt senses. But if we start the process of yoga with the tongue and use the tongue in service, and we're very careful about our speech, then the truth will be revealed to us. And so it's such a foundational principle, the words that we use and how we speak. Your words are your bond, and they're also the seeds. What you say will start to create your reality in the world. And just in a practical way, I brought an extra handout, which is probably available somewhere, called Nonviolent Communication. Okay, good. That you can look at later, but I just want to advocate for it. I found out about it about 25 years ago, and I've used it in many different settings, and it's a practice of the way of speaking so that you take the judgment out of your speech when you speak to people. You don't ascribe intention to them, because that's the thing that rankles people in any given situation when you're speaking about something. For instance, if someone comes in here and slams the door and it throws my paper off the table, I could say, you know, you're really trying to bug me, aren't you? And, you know, every time you come in here, you do that. That's not nonviolent speech, because I've ascribed intentionality to the person. A nonviolent speech would sound like this. I noticed when you came in, you closed the door really hard. You may not have even noticed. I'm sure you had no intention to, but it threw my paper off the table. And here's how it made me feel. It made me feel that you were unaware that I was even in the room or cared that I was here. That's how it made me feel, even though I'm sure you didn't intend that. And next time, would you mind, when you come in, not closing the door so hard? It's miraculous how when you take the intention out of the report that you're giving to somebody, that it brings it to a level of neutrality that doesn't exacerbate the situation and ratchet up and make somebody feel reactive. And that you can look at carefully in that handout that I gave you. It's just, I condensed everything the author had said on his website down into one page so that you could kind of take it, look it over, and see if you can extract. And even if you take the simplest principles away from it, you'll find it effective. And finally, coming to the power of mantra and training your mind. That's number five, which is your mind, according to the Bhagavad Gita, can be your best friend or your worst enemy. So let's just say, like, say where there's an enemy country and they're always sending in internet robots to disturb all kinds of the way people think in a certain country, and they're constantly thinking ill of you and sending in harsh messages of war and things like that. Your mind can become like that and can become very disturbing. And so the yogic texts say that the yoga is centered around the mind, and to make the mind peaceful and the consciousness expansive is the center point of the practice, and it brings one to a sort of peace. The mind's also compared sometimes to a horse. If you jump on a wild horse, if you don't care where you're going, then that's okay. But if you want to go in a certain direction, you have to actually train the horse. And we only get one mind, comes standard, usually. And so taking good care of it is important. So there's a couple of points here about the mind, and I'm going back to this point of creating space in the mind. So there's two words in Sanskrit. One is sukha, and the other is dukkha. So please say sukha.
Sukha.
And now say dukkha.
Dukkha.
So sukha has the word su and ka. And if you remember earlier on, I said ka means space. So su means good. Ka means good space or an expansiveness. And du means bad or contracted. And so dukkha means that the space of your mind and your consciousness contracts. So there are ways in which you can organize your life in such a way that the consciousness expands. And when it does, you feel what's called sukha. And this is, sukha is normally translated as happiness, and dukkha is translated as distress or unhappiness. So mantra meditation, or taking a mantra. Mantra is meant to help to expand the mind. And when you concentrate on the mantra, this is kind of meditation that you repeat a mantra, and as you're repeating the mantra, you listen to it. The mantra has its own calibration, it has its own power, and it helps you to come to that expansive state of mind, and you'll feel the peace for yourself. And you'll be in the state of sukha. Ka, space becomes good, it becomes big. And when we concentrate conversely on all kinds of noise that may be irrelevant to us, or maybe even a lower vibration. For instance, you may, like, say you watch the 24-hour news cycle. There are all kinds of things that may be in your circle of concern, but none that come even close to your circle of influence. Your chitta, your consciousness, may contract by hearing that kind of vibration. And so the practice of mantra meditation is a way to expand the chitta, and you can do that on a regular basis as a practice. And the mantra also, my last point, creates what's called acoustic resonance. If you take two tuning forks, and I've ordered some, so I'm going to show this as an actual experiment in my next presentations on mantra meditation. But if you hit one of the tuning forks with a rubber mallet, the other one that's next to it starts vibrating at the same level. Everything will vibrate at a certain pitch, and we also are the same way. And we hear the mantra, then our consciousness, which is, as I said, distinct from the body, will resonate, and we'll be able to expand the consciousness through the resonation of higher sound called mantra. There. I fit it all in. So I hope I left you with a few points that you can take away. And since, do we have 3 minutes? Or should we stop here?
I think can we be a little flexible?
Sure. What's the next on the agenda?
I think it was just action items.
Yeah, we have.
And the oats and stuff that we need.
Yeah, we have some done.
Okay. If you can just give back anything that you're taking away from this, like it's in your pocket. I'm going to try this when I leave. If you walk out of here, someone grabs you by the arm and says, what was that guy talking about in there? This is the one thing that you'll say that you took away. What one thing would you say?
Situations, what you say, sometimes in my opinion or in my life, I think I have a problem, but it's not a problem. It's a simple situation. So control my mind, control the situation pass, and the problem could be solved as well. So that it's kind of controlling my mind and don't be crazy and, you know.
Yeah.
It's situation is the point.
That's a good mantra, don't be crazy. Yeah, because it's easy to get crazy and be, and I like how you put it about the situation, please.
Yeah, because it's time to figure it out why this happened to me, and I think this probably happened for a reason that I need to learn something. And this is like a taking away for the good reasons. It's only for me, and this the situation is happening for me, and you know, it's kind of that. But what you say about the carry the thing, so I have to let it go, and another situation's coming, and next time probably confront the situation. That's a simple thing, and trying to learn.
Nice. Thank you very much. That was very helpful.
Control as much as I can.
Yes.
I cannot control everything.
No, and that's an important point also. I mean, that has to do a lot with our circle of influence and our circle of concern. Trying to control everything is definitely a prescription for anxiety, because there's practically nothing that I can control, ultimately. I can be of service and enter into a situation and do the best I can to serve, and the result isn't necessarily up to me how it comes out. We'll just take a few more. Anything that you're taking away, a principle, a thought.
Removing the intention from the dialogue, the people that you bother here, I think really helps, kind of create a neutral kind of ground.
Yes.
Communications are really, there's many good things.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for remembering that one, because I think it's one of the most important of all the aspects. The person who wrote this, when I was reading yesterday, he obviously had a profound realization about it, enough to write it and present it, and it really does work in all different kinds of situations. Maybe just one more, because you all need a break. Yes?
So there were two different areas, where attention goes, energy flows,
yeah.
And then also choosing what's to let into your heart. It seems like where they meet is all of these different stimuli from the environment are coming in, and you can't stop that, but what you can choose is what to give your attention to.
Perfect. That was a really nice synthesis of the two. Very helpful. Yes. Well, I'm deeply touched that you invited me here and to, you know, just have a snapshot into this powerful team that you have here. The energy is palpable, I should say, and I feel like I'm sitting with the cream of the crop here. Really,
I told Devisha she go about our group and what we do before, so he knows about our operations, and I told him how much we do. So he's a winner.
Thank you so much.
And no, thank you.
Just a question for you, Manu, if the team wants to hear Devisha Shika speak more. How would they get plugged into your group? Because you have you speak about once a month, I think, or so.
Yes. Thanks to Justina for inviting us.
And Mana's one of the leaders for the Conscious Living Group.
So if you want to stay more connected, you can join Conscious Living at Salesforce Chatter Group. We post it there, and you can also follow up with me. I see a few people who come to our sessions, Zamu's here.
I've been a tutor myself.
So I'll send out your contact and the link to the chatter group with the team.
Yes.
And also, after I give presentations, which I'm doing all week here, I have a Zoom call where if anybody wants to ask more follow-up questions, because sometimes you walk away and go, wait a minute, how's this work? I'll be having one on Friday at noon. It's called Ask Vaish. That's what they call me for short, because it's easier. Ask Vaish. And it's a Zoom call you can, Zoom webinar that you can sign on to at around noon, around lunchtime. And it's just for 40 minutes, but follow-up questions from a lot of the corporate things that we're doing all over the valley, and some people, and you can pick up, you know, some of the vibration when you come on there too.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'll share that as well.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I hope that your team excels in all ways, and that everybody lives happy.
Armarman, Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman, hey, Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman. Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman.